Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Oliver Friesen, CEO of Golden Metal Resources. Welcome back, Oliver.
Hey, Phil and Kevin. Good to speak to you guys again.
So you've been to Japan where you attended the International Tungsten Industry Association, ITIA for short, and you waxed lyrical about it on X, I see. Probably the best mining-related conference you've ever been to, were the words I believe you used. So tell us more about what you saw, experienced, and the conversations you had.
Yeah, of course. So yeah, no, I mean, I didn't mean that lightly. It was honestly the best conference I've been to. I mean, I've been to conferences all over the world. You know, a lot of times it's just when you go to these things, it's such a broad spectrum of people there, and you know, a lot of, you know, people trying to sell you stuff, which kind of detracts from the experience. But here in Osaka, I think the main takeaway point, the reason it was so impactful, was the fact that I would say probably 95% of people and the decision makers in the tungsten industry globally were there. So you had a plethora of delegates from the big players, including Korea, Japan, China, United States, Australia, Europe. I mean, everyone was there, and decisions and business was being done. So the great thing was we were able to sit down with, I would say, probably 10 to 15 really impactful groups within the tungsten industry and have, you know, meaningful 30, 45 minute sit downs, which is obviously super exciting for us. So great conference. Looking forward to the one next year as well, because there's just so much to be done in this industry. And ultimately, just a lot of excitement that came out of the industry. And that was just, you know, speaking to people firsthand and those who are making decisions. So it was a great conference. And most importantly, a lot of really great follow-up that's going to happen as a result of that.
I mean, obviously, I think while you were there, there was a breaking news on the Gold Telegraph. And I think you X'd it as well, basically saying China will require export permits for some graphite products to protect national security. Obviously, you know, we alluded earlier on that potentially resource wars kicking into high gear, metal wars. How do you see that playing out potentially with tungsten as well? And was there any conversations around that that you had while you were there?
Yeah, it was really interesting. I was actually on the flight back from Osaka and I was looking at Twitter, and sure enough, that news started to hit my wire of the breaking news. Because the question has been, what metal is China going to do next? And graphite is obviously a pretty important one. So it was very serendipitous, I guess you could say, because a lot of the conversations in Osaka were specifically about China and you know, them being a massively dominant player in the tungsten industry. And more importantly, and it was sort of interesting because there were a lot of Chinese delegates there. So people, especially during some of the talks, had to be somewhat cautious with how they approached it. But it was very clear. One of the main questions was, okay, we need to, you know, the industry ultimately needs to find Western world suppliers of tungsten concentrate. It was sort of the elephant in the room, so to say. And you know, there was no solution, so to say. Obviously, we put our hands up and we think that we could be one of the suppliers of tungsten concentrate in the Western world. But the main lingering question was, okay, well, where do we go from here? And how do we start to shore up Western supplies of tungsten concentrate? And then sure enough, about 2 days later on the flight home, there's China banning exports. Or not banning, but curbing exports of graphite. And I think looking at a lot of the graphite names in the U.S. and Australia, they've done really well on the back of that, as you can expect. And just a few notes, actually, and we tweeted this out through our company account on X, but just to make some comparisons between graphite and tungsten, because the question now begs is, okay, well, what's next? Resource wars, I think, are only, you know, growing here. So the question is, okay, well, what could China potentially target next? And so just a few numbers for the listeners to reference here. So in terms of Chinese annual production, so total global production that's controlled by the Chinese. So for graphite, it's 79%, which is, I think, one of the main reasons that they chose that, because they have control over the supply chain. Well, tungsten is actually more than that. It's 85 to 86%. So that's just one data point. Another one is, okay, well, what's the United States domestic primary production of graphite? Well, that's zero, which means that obviously most of their imported graphite comes from China. And to compare that to annual U.S. tungsten primary production, once again, that number is zero. So a lot of comparisons to be made here. And then the last one is, okay, well, what's the annual percentage of Chinese imports into the U.S. of graphite and tungsten? And those are both about 35%. So obviously their biggest import partner for graphite and tungsten is China. And I think one of the main differences that I noted was, well, the main reason that I'm hearing as to why China chose graphite was they wanted to target the EV industry in the US, because obviously EV batteries require graphite. However, one of the major differences, and one of the, I think, the reasons why tungsten could potentially be next, I mean, it's anyone's guess what it could be, but tungsten has significant military applications. And I think that's really pertinent and important right now. I mean, it's awful to see what's going on around the world, but the reality is, with geopolitical tensions where they are, you know, you would think that maybe they would target a metal that goes into the defense industries, and tungsten is certainly one of those. So, you know, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it's certainly something to keep an eye on, because I think these resource war is really only escalated at this point. And the U.S. needs to find domestic sources of all these metals, including tungsten.
Why do you think the U.S. and the West, Europe, have been sleeping on this?
It's a really good question. And you know, people have their kind of different speculations as to why. I think the main thing that stands out to me is the fact that, you know, when you look at a lot of these Western world countries, what's really taken a foothold here, and I'm from Vancouver originally, and I grew up, I remember there were protesters all over the bridges in Vancouver protesting oil production and oil pipelines running through Vancouver. So I think in the Western world, you know, we're is in a position where a lot of people, it's sort of the not in my backyard syndrome, right? They don't want these mines and projects to happen in their backyard. They'd rather, you know, the mines and the oil to be produced in China or Russia. And that's perfectly okay with China and Russia. And that's exactly what they've done, right? They've completely supported the industry. When it comes to tungsten mining, you know, you hear about some of these stories of groups going into China to see these mines. They find a showing and they effectively set up a plant and start mining. It's as simple as that. But you think about the process that has persisted in the Western world, and oftentimes, you know, when people start to protest these things, I think that's one of the reasons why there's just been such an issue and struggle to get really good mines into production in the US, in Europe, and a lot of Western world countries, is just the people ultimately say, not in my backyard, but you can do it somewhere else. But now that's led us to the position we're in now, where China and Russia dominate the supply chains of so many metals, and the US is going, oh, maybe we shouldn't have done that. And I think that the way that they've really switched and changed their speed is all of a sudden, you know, 2-3 years ago, there was probably no money available to support these domestic mining projects. But you look at the amount of money through the DOD alone, through the DPA Title III, I mean, it's almost $1 billion now that's been given to them by the Biden administration to deploy directly into U.S.-based projects. And that's just one department, the DOC, DOE, the list goes on. They all have money now to deploy because the U.S. is saying, okay, this is a problem and we need to fix it. So the timing could honestly not be better. And just in terms of that environmental point that I mentioned, because, I mean, people still do protest and they still don't want these things in their own backyard. I think oftentimes they're very short-sighted. But that's why you got to focus on the best mining friendly jurisdictions within the Western world, right? Because you can be in Canada and in Vancouver and everyone's going to hate you, but if you take this project to northern Quebec or Newfoundland, and that's a very mining friendly area, and you're going to have much different support levels from those areas. So just to kind of tie that back to what we're doing at Golden Metal, well, we're in Nevada, which is the top ranked mining jurisdiction in the world, period. And that's exactly why we focus in Nevada, because we know we have the support of the people and the government to allow us to push forward and do what we need to do with this project and this company.
The Chinese and the Russians must have been cheering when they brought in the ESG regulations, no? Because effectively that just means, oh, that could take anything from another 2 years to 10 years and a huge layer of costs involved to actually get it out the ground.
Oh, completely. Like I said, I mean, everything that the Western world has done to shoot themselves in the foot when it comes to mining and resource exploitation has been cheered on by Russia and China and the likes, because this allows them to forge the dominance that they have now. So hopefully that's changing. I think it is when you look at how the Western world is now reacting and saying, okay, we need to figure this out here and come up with a solution.
Well, it has to, at the very worst or the very best, not get any worse. I mean, if you're telling me that only 15% of production is in the rest of the world and not in China for tungsten, then surely if China just banned exports of tungsten, then that 15% possibly wouldn't even cover the rest of the world's need for tungsten in the defense industry.
No, it wouldn't even come close. And that's why they're targeting these metals where they have, you know, 80, 90, 95, even 100% of total global annual production, because they can curb that export, and the rest of the world, and especially the industries that require those metals, fall to their knees. And that's exactly why they're doing what they're doing. So when it comes to graphite, you know, all of a sudden, all of these electric vehicle companies, you know, in the Teslas of the world, who have just been reliant and expectant of cheap Chinese graphite, are now scrambling. And all these Western world properties and companies, you know, people are scrambling. That's why these share prices are up where they are, because all of a sudden their metal and what they can produce of the ground has become, you know, much, much more valuable. So when China produces 85% and if they say no one else gets any more, I mean, it's mayhem and havoc.
Mayhem.
It was like the weaponized gas during the Russian invasion. They're weaponizing metals, aren't they?
100%. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What the gas, you know, curbing the gas exports did to Europe, right. Yeah. And the UK, to prices. That, I mean, inflation is where it is because mostly because of energy prices, right? And the Western world sanctioned Russia on a lot of these things. And they said, okay, well, you don't get, you know, these natural gas and oil and whatever else and metals. And China has the metal supply chain completely under wraps. So it's scary to think what they could do next. But that's where we fit in and how we think we can help resolve this issue.
So obviously, since you're last on, should we talk about some of the news releases?
Sure, let's do it. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so obviously you unveiled significant copper mineralization at your wholly owned Garfield project in Nevada's Walker Lane mineral belt. Ground exploration and geological mapping reveals strong potentials for substantial porphyry and skarntite copper mineralization, with 37 collected samples currently undergoing multi-element analysis at ALS laboratories. Results are expected within 4 to 6 weeks. Oliver, you expressed optimism, citing clear evidence of both porphyry and skarntite mineralization, and anticipates the upcoming lab results will provide a clearer direction for the project's next steps. Do you want to just add a bit more color to that, please, Oliver?
Yeah, of course. So Garfield's one in the portfolio that was certainly kind of a tertiary asset, and it still is. I mean, the priority is Pilot Mountain and Golconda and Kibby. But I think what investors and listeners should really take away from that news is the quality of the portfolio from the top to the bottom. You know, I'm an exploration geologist myself by trade. So, you know, when I see these projects, it's really my bread and butter to get in there and start to kind of layer in new data sets to really unlock value. And most importantly, move these assets up the value chain, creating value for our shareholders. So, you know, when we acquired that asset probably two and a bit years ago, it was a tiny footprint. It was, I think it was about 5 original claims. It's now north of 50 claims. It's gone from one individual copper showing, and now we have substantial system there. And it looks like we have both porphyry and scar mineralization, which I won't go too into the weeds technically, but it means you have a much, much larger footprint to go after here. So that's just showing listeners, you know, what we're capable of doing at this company and how we've taken an asset that we acquired for pennies on the dollar, and now we've turned it into what could be almost a standalone in a company. I mean, you look at the size of the footprint there, you look at some of the copper grades at surface, you look at the photo in the last RNS. I mean, my goodness, that is one of the most beautiful rock photos I've seen ever, the beautiful malachite streaks through there. And that's just showing you what potentially could be there. So we're looking forward, obviously, to getting those rock results. We'll put those out as soon as we can, and then we'll figure out what next steps are from there. But just showing, I think, from top to bottom, the quality of the portfolio and the way that we're to add value with relatively low cost and really kind of targeted exploration as well.
You can tell you're a journalist that you find a rock photograph beautiful.
Journalist or geologist?
Geologist, doesn't
they? Journalist.
Oh, sorry, I meant geologist. Is there a ginger cat in our list with a bad attitude?
No, not yet. But in a nearby town, you could probably get lasagna. So if I do find one, we should be in good hands. That's the great thing about Garfield as well. It's about 10 minutes from the nearest town. It's actually, funny enough, a defense town. There, you drive in there, and there's army barracks all over the place. So it's a And that's actually not far from Pilot Mountain as well. But it's nice and close to town, which is great.
From when you listed, which was the 10th of May, which was my birthday, because that's how I remember it.
I won't forget that.
You're in a situation where you came with tungsten and the potential for gold. And we've now gone to tungsten, gold, and copper, and lithium. So I don't think you could have imagined that 4 months ago. Or could you? And you were keeping it all from us.
Well, I mean, we had Garfield in the portfolio. It was just there wasn't much there, right? But the reality is, you know, when we look at these projects and do our due diligence, you know, we have a great team, and obviously geologist myself, I get very much in the weeds and the technical side still. But, you know, we acquire properties that where we see a lot of potential. You know, we're not going to acquire a property where we think that's kind of the best it's going to get. So when we acquired this asset, you know, we were able to acquire some data sets which showed some a really good promise outside of the claim boundaries. So we knew there was copper there, and ultimately it just has sort of proven our thesis and our technical team to be right, which is we can identify excellent opportunities and add a lot of value. So now you have a fantastic copper play. And the reality is people who've invested in the story get access to some of the best metals, I would say, right now. Tungsten being, for all the reasons we discussed earlier, lithium everyone knows why lithium is so important. Copper as well. I mean, these are the metals that I think people want to get exposure to. Gold as well. I mean, look at the price of gold and where people think gold could go. So that's one of the benefits of our stories. You get access to all these great metals, tungsten obviously being the focus, but as we continue to add value to these other ones, those are going to be super important assets for the business as well, and are already becoming super important with the results that we announced at Garfield.
Do you expect that because there really is very little lithium produced in the U.S., that this is going to be another situation where the U.S. government back a project to allow you to progress it?
On the lithium side, what's interesting is the DOE, which has very, 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 very deep pockets, actually just provided mine financing to, I believe it was the Thacker Pass project. And the financing package was north of $1 billion. So that just gives you an idea as to how the government's getting involved across multiple departments and across multiple commodities. So obviously for the energy industry, you know, lithium is a really important one. So when you see them providing mine financing in the order of magnitude of $1 billion, it just puts into perspective how important domestic mining really is. So Department of Defense is obviously a big one for us, being tungsten project. But you know, DOE is getting heavily involved, DOM, DOC. And also just on the DOE front, Department of Energy, just as a quick reminder, I think we've discussed this, but, you know, nuclear fusion, as it continues to take off here, will require significant amounts of tungsten. So I think tungsten, actually, one thing we're working on is getting tungsten on the DOE's radar, because they have deep, deep pockets. And obviously being the only and most advanced tungsten project in the U.S., I think will be really important for the fusion industry in the next couple of years here. And as this technology continues to make waves towards commerciality.
So tying these two things together, obviously, GMET, and you went to the conference. Give us three takeaways or three meetings that you had or three potentials that you think, oh, I'm glad I went to that conference because we met these people, or this is potential or whatever.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, three main takeaways. Number one would be the quality of the meetings and the people that we were able to meet with. Obviously, I can't comment too much as to what was discussed and what potential outcomes could be. But what I can say is we spoke to various, off-takers, metal traders, as well as development and exploration companies as well. Those were focused in the U.S., Australia, and then in Asia, specifically kind of South Korea and Japan, I would say. So we've had some really fruitful meetings, especially with some of the U.S. groups. So looking forward to pushing those conversations forward now. And hopefully there's some follow-up to the market that we can announce as things progress. But I just say the quality of the meetings and worst case scenario, it's about getting this project, this company on their radar so they know what's coming. But yeah, some fantastic meetings with people who are making decisions in the tungsten industry. Number two, and I think a really important thing that came up in a lot of conversations was regarding what's called the Defense Logistics Agency. And I'll also quickly touch on this because it's an important point. And the DLA is actually a U.S. department, obviously, that actually houses significant stockpiles of many strategic and critical metals, including tungsten. So they have these stockpiles for kind of a rainy day, effectively. But in the last, I don't know how long it's been going on for, but because there hasn't really been a need for domestic stockpiles, because China's been a great, you know, supplier of these important metals, they've actually been selling off, the DLA has been selling off their tungsten stockpiles, and they've almost depleted them completely. And one of the main conversation points was, and something that came up in a lot of the presentations, was the fact that the DLA has now stopped selling. So this, you know, they used to be a major supplier of tungsten to the U.S. market. They've actually completely stopped selling. So the supply, you know, wicket has been turned off. And most importantly, they've actually announced that they're going to start buying. So all of a sudden, one of your major suppliers has become one of the major buyers. So, And that's in the U.S. specifically. And the DLA has very specific rules as to where they can buy their supplies from. So that's a really important point and something that really got me excited. So there's some more news to come on that as the DLA announced, particularly when they're going to start buying. And some indicate that it could be relatively soon. And then I think just the last thing was the Western world supply chain of tungsten. Like we've discussed in this podcast, you know, there's been a decades under investment in the mining sector in the U.S., particularly for tungsten. You know, a lot of projects have been shot in the foot by environmentalists and other people in various jurisdictions. And ultimately, just speaking to people and realizing that isn't okay anymore. And China has forged their dominance in tungsten industry and others. And now it's really about the U.S. and other Western world countries banding together. It's about all us companies with great projects, you know, banding together with the off-takers like GTP and saying, this is enough is enough. We need to solve this. It's a matter of global security and Western world security. So just having those conversations and realizing how important it is for all the Western world groups, regardless if you're a producer, an off-taker, a trader, to band together to solve this issue. And we've very much find ourselves in the middle of that with the largest undeveloped tungsten deposit on U.S. soil.
You can envisage down the line that there's going to be a China price and there's going to be a Western price, no? So, you know, internally in China, tungsten will be X. And in the West, because it's obviously not as prevalent, it's going to be two or three times X, you would imagine. I mean, I'm speculating, but I can't see that China wouldn't try and get themselves a competitive advantage, which is basically what it would be.
Yeah, no, you're bang on, Kevin. And that's already started to happen in a few metals, that you find that there's two pricing structures. And what was interesting was just on that end, one of the questions was, okay, well, where are the next major projects coming from? Obviously, Pilot Mountain is in that conversation, but there's one major project that's about to go into production, and it's in Kazakhstan. And guess who has complete control of that project and will receive all of the concentrate? Well, it's China. So once again, it's China. You know, they've seen this coming. So they're not only looking at resources within their own kind of city country limits, but they've also, as most people are well aware, they've really expanded into places like Africa, into East Asia, and they've gotten their tentacles, so to say, on a lot of great projects. So once again, that's just further enhancing China's dominance. And like I've said, when it comes to pricing, you know, graphite, I'm sure pricing is going to look a lot different in the short term here and medium term.
When we were in Zambia last year, the Chinese were all over it in terms of projects and in terms of sadly polluting the place. It was really not very good to look at. And in terms of the graphite, this is a plug for one of the other companies that we deal with there, but it's on the same story. You've seen a bump in all of the companies' share prices that are producing graphite. Sovereign Metals has the second biggest graphite find, if you like, in the world, by the looks of things, and the share price hasn't moved. And that just gives you a state of what's happening in the small cap market in the UK. You know, even your price has gone down in the last few weeks at a time when, like, why should the GMET's price gone down or Gold Metal Resources price gone down when all of these things are inevitable almost? I mean, it's not like we can suddenly change and speak rationally to China and say, okay, China, please give us your resources. It's not going to happen. So it's bizarre. The market is just reacting the opposite way to the way that it should. And I don't understand.
Well, that's the UK specifically. I think in some instances, the UK market can lag a little bit. I know all the graphite names in Canada are screaming higher. So maybe the UK investors should have a look at some of those. And I think, you know, Canadian investors and North American investors, they understand the space really well and they know where to put their money. And there's been a lot of money made in those markets. So I think the UK, and I you know, I've been here for 3 years now, I've been watching the market quite closely, and it definitely lags. But the reality is, I think as, you know, time progresses, the UK does catch up and sometimes can really not overshoot per se, but they can really start to get into a story. It just takes a bit longer. So I think that just means that there's an opportunity here for the UK investors to start to position themselves. Because if you look at Australia, you look at Canada, you look at the US as to what the equity prices are doing, I think that's an indication as to where things are going. So just a matter of getting positioned accordingly.
I mean, that segues nicely onto the fact that you started trading on the OTCQB venture market in the US. Obviously, want to enhance shareholder value by broadening your investor base and improving liquidity. So just tell us about how that's gone so far.
there's been a few technical difficulties at the start. And actually, this is what they do say, is that usually takes about 2 weeks to kind of make the market. So we're working with the OTC right now. And what we're doing is we planned our market in the US to sort of coincide with when the market will be made a bit more efficient. It's the first probably week and a bit was just kind of getting things up and running. The next week will be effectively getting the spread. So the market makers need to now clue in. Right now, the spread is far too wide for anyone to initiate any trades. But the market makers are now, we're kind of having to phone them individually. So it usually takes about 2 weeks to really get it up and running. So we're probably about 3-4 days from that happening now. And like I said, a lot of the marketing that we plan, we've delayed specifically to coincide with a point where, you know, if we do the marketing and get the story out, people can go and actually look at a reasonable spread and buy stock if they're so inclined. So yeah, it's been good. Can, you know, like I said, probably about 2 weeks post completing that to getting it to the point where we need it to be, but we're almost there now. And we've been working very closely with the OTC, and very shortly here, this will be very easily and readily tradable by US investors and those in the US who are interested in what we're doing, which I think there should be a lot of them.
Anything else you want to talk about, Oliver, before we sign off?
No, I think that's good, Jen. So it's been great to catch up. Like I said, there's a lot of great conversations that we had during the conference. So we'll continue to keep the market updated as to when we can. There'll certainly be some Garfield news coming out here once we get those rock results back. So a lot to look forward to across the business. I think, you know, we're perfectly positioned. The timing is about as good as it's ever been for mining in the U.S. So we're super bullish, super excited, and looking forward to keeping your listeners, you know, keeping them along for the story as we progress through 2023 and then beyond.
Hey, Oliver Friesen, CEO of Golden Metal Resources. Thanks very much for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Jens.
Thanks, Oliver.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.